Welcome, everyone, to our Thursday night Stargate Roundtable on this January 7th, 2016. We have a guest the second hour, and we have a lot of things to discuss here in the first hour as far as Stargate Roundtable, and we are looking forward to having even more communication from all of our listeners. So we're going to start, as we usually do, with Angel Sue setting the tone and getting us off to a new year for 2016.
Thank you for that. And January the 7th, let's see. Oh, Marita Robert, we wish you the best and that you're forever young and vital and happy, and you deserve so much happiness with this birthday that you're experiencing today. So I'm going to start.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm going to start this off by saying that there are many things to celebrate, even what we don't understand. So I want you all, as we welcome you in the light of the most radiant one, the light of God that never, never fails, and in the office of the Christ, and only in the office of the Christ, we're invoking the loving energies of Saint Germain and the Violet Flame. And if you will celebrate the people that are near and dear to you, whatever circumstance that they're in, we know that this past year has seen many things that are hard and heavy to carry, and that this year as well is starting out with some challenges physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. But all of this, through the law of one, can be brought beyond our understanding into the perfect, divine, happy solution. So with this in mind, think about your family members. And in my family, I ask you to think about my niece's husband, survivor's guilt. He's really suffering with the accident that happened that was not his fault. And the lady died in his big truck. He's going to be able to still be driving that big truck for the feed company that he works for in Iowa. And he's suffering. I know that Penny has lost her beloved up in Canada. And whatever they are going through, or even the transition phase, for many people that we know of. Marita Robert, I know in your family you have a young one that is needing prayer for her and her family. So we'll just ask that all of these things, through the law of one, we know that all can be celebrated as we give thanks for God, Goddess, all there is, stepping in and resetting things for the highest good. So if you will just call in your support team, your guides, your masters, oh, your higher self, and your beloved twin flame, your angels, your teachers, all those that support you, your counsels of light, all those that supported you, past and present and future, from the other sides, the other dimensions, the other kingdoms. We're just going to welcome them all in as we celebrate this opportunity to live in a higher vibration, to live with more love, to live with welcoming more miracles into our lives. So with Nisara, Nisara, the Reformation Act, as a good focus, and our Faction 3 White Knights, we're calling in their energies too. Our galactic forces of light, all those that support this change into a new paradigm, where heaven is here now. That more and more things of joy and happiness, healing and harmony come in, and we celebrate these birthdays far longer than we ever expected. I think, 10,000 and plus whatever we are, it's a good amount of time to celebrate joy and being the divine child that we are. So with this in mind, I ask you now, call in all the beings for your concerns and the concerns that you are aware of, and the situations that are in your connection with at-one-ment, known and unknown, seen and unseen, all these beings from all time and space. And we're asking now that the celebration begin through the Law of One. For when one is harmed, all are harmed. As one is helped, and all are helped. And we're calling for this great healing now, so that all will be healed and experience heaven on earth. And with this, in the name of who we are, and we are one with all there is, we ask that only that which is the highest good of all concern for every person, place, condition, and thing, and situation, everything, through time and space, that this be brought to that perfect, divine, happy solution. And that we all live in true divinity. So Saint Germain 101 and all of that good other stuff from the masters and from the angels and from Mother, Father, God, Goddess, all there is. We welcome this now in the office of the Christ. And we say that word of the ancient language of power, Kuxal, Maxal, times 9. To bring it forward now in the perfect way. And we're closing this by saying all men, all women, all children, all beings, all creation, we are all one, and we choose to live in happiness now. So be it, and so it is, and I pass that talking stick back.
Well, thank you, Angel Sue. We appreciate you getting us started this evening. I'm going to call on our dear little Rainbird here to bring us up to date with what's going on in the Mayan calendar energies for the week. And then all of you grab a paper and pencil, because I have some phone numbers and some information for you to write down after Rainbird finishes. So, Rainbird, pass the talking stick.
Okay, I'll take that talking stick. Thank you, Marita Robert. And so today is a six kawak. It is a blue rhythmic storm. And it's lots of rhythm, lots of tone six in this in this day as well. It's doubled in its guide quality. So it's the tone six rhythm, it's the tone of equality. It's a time to assume responsibility. And we're working with Kawak, the storm. It's a visionary aspect. And our responsibility with Kawak is creating transformation for others and lighting clear thought. So what a good day to do that. And so the gifts are the possibility of freedom and the power of catalyzing. And it's a time to let go of addiction to crisis, despair, fear, and the illusion of separateness. So that's today, and then tomorrow we have a portal day. It's a 7.5, so we complete the first annual, the first 20 days of this Mayan matrix, the Zolk'in. And so it's a day 20. It's a portal day. It's a 7. And 7 is channeling. It's resonant. It's about inspiring and about attunement. That magical tone. The midpoint between the 1 and the 13. And the difference between the 13 and the 20. It just works all over in the Mayan calendar. It's a powerful place. So we're halfway through the wave when we're on tone 7. And how is that the sun? It's the 20th glyph or the zero glyph, either way, however you count that. It's the healer aspect, and it's about rising to Christ consciousness and striving towards wholeness and transmitting energy to others. And the gifts are the possibility, thinking, unconditional love, and the God self. Let go of limitation and let go of separation, and really enjoy this day tomorrow with this high energy of 7.5. Very powerful sun energy, transmitting energy to others. So let's do that tomorrow with that good energy. And then Saturday, it's an 8 in each, and 8 will always revisit the wave we just were in, which was Inish. And so it's a new moon on Saturday as well. So we have that Inish, the first solar glyph. And it's so it carries that unity consciousness, the one, the mother, the dragon. It's an artist aspect. And it's about creation and self-dependence. We draw to ourselves the creative forces of the universe with this tone. So do that on Saturday with that new moon energy. No limitation. Set your intentions for this new moon cycle with this energy of 8, fine-tuning, harmonic resonance, niche, the mother of the dragon, and drawing the creative forces into our lives. So do that on Saturday, and then Sunday we have another portal day, and it is 9 eek. Eek is the wind, and that nine energy is greater cycles, completion, expansion, pulsation. It's called the solar tone. This tone represents the power of action set into motion, and we do that on Sunday with this powerful portal energy. It's a seasonal day, so so we have that aspect, that interdimensionality coming with us, and with Eek, the wind, which is also interdimensionality, it's listening, the visionary aspect, and it's listening to those voices of spirit, of our guides and angels and teachers. So our task, our creating, the co-creation of heaven on earth. So what a beautiful way to do that on this good portal day on Sunday. So it's truth and seek truth in all matters, and remember your unity with spirit. So, in those gifts, you have the voice of spirit, and spirit works through you. So, enjoy Sunday, doing your work on Sunday. Much support from the Mayan calendar for our work on Sunday. And then Monday is a 10 Akbal, and 10 is manifestation, Akbal the night. Working in the night, it's an artist aspect. It's about our participation and participation in our abundance and our belief in our abundance. And it's also about learning from the dream time. So all of that with that good manifestation number of 10, that manifestation of intention, planetary. So good energy on Monday, and then Tuesday and 11 con, and then 11. It's that disintegration or dissonant change, spectral. And we have the Obama's last State of the Union address on Tuesday with that 11 con energy. And con is about planting those seeds. It's a seed. It's a healing energy, and it's about our openness to life and self-determination, harmony seeking, and it's about timing. That's great, because I like to listen to Obama's speech about timing. He's always good with that, and he'll be doing well on Tuesday with his speech, I'm sure. And then on Wednesday, a 12 cheek chong, 12 being that tone of crystal tone of complex stability, that unity of polarity. And so that crystal energy with cheek chong, the serpent, is about our body sensing. It's a warrior aspect, and it's about remaining open to change and distinguishing between the body and the soul and transmuting energy. And it carries that gift of motivation to change and instinct and body sensing. So let go of your insecurities and fears about intimacy and issues about the body or blockages by the ego. Let go of all those things and enjoy Wednesday with that 12 cheek chong energy. And then on Thursday, when we come back, it'll be a 13 kini. 13 is transcending, and kini is linking between heaven and earth, past and future, birth and death. It's a world bridger. It's a warrior aspect. It's about forgiveness and moving into a state of grace. So let go of that which is no more. Let go of the ego, surrender the ego, the controlling behavior, and the belief that life is a struggle. Enjoy kini when we come back with that 13 tone of transcendence, the universal movement of change. So I see a lot of change aspected well in our calendar this week with the Mayan calendar, and lots of opportunity for working with no limitation and positive forward movement. So with that, I pass the talking stick back to you, Marita.
Thank you very much. Is there anything else as far as your teaching schedule or anything that you need to inform people of?
I'm not going to have a class on Sunday. Just I have another event going on. But I will keep you posted. I will be posting a regular teaching schedule for once a month. So it is upcoming.
So well, just remind me, and if I forget to ask you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so now I ask you all to get your paper and pencil, because there's a few things that want to, as we've started this new year, our Stargate Roundtable team has met on Sunday with a conference call, and we'll be doing that all the month of January here until we get everything, a planning of things, some changes made, and also just to give you an opportunity to call us and tell us what it is you want, what you'd like to see. And the one thing that we will be doing differently as far as those that are calling in on the phone, you still have all the month of January that you can use the number we've been using. But BBS has a line that is much clearer and will be easier for you to use. And this number is available. You can call in and you can listen to any of the broadcasts that are on what you might have thought you had to have a computer for. You can listen to all of them on the phone. So when you want to come in for this call, you call 716-748-0144. 716-748-0144. And so this is a way that you'll be able to listen and have an opportunity. Now, you will not be able, we can't star six and bring you in, but we couldn't do that on the other one because the line was too noisy anyway. And this will be something that I've been paying $9 a month for 16 years, and now I will not be having to do that because BBS is offering this to us without any charge. And you think, well, it's not a lot, but, $100 a year for that many years would be worth something. On the Sunday nights when we're having our conference call, anytime between now and then, call me at 317-773-0061. Tell us what you would like, what you don't like, what you'd like to have more of, and give us your input. This is Stargate Roundtable. I don't want to be a dictator, and I want you to contribute. Roundtable means that we all contribute our talents and our abilities so that everyone has a chance to provide and to give what they came to do. So call us if you have suggestions, questions, if you have people that you think we might listen to for our guests, that would be good too. And then I'll also change. Omina's been here every third Thursday, and that was the plan this month. She was planning to be there, and now she's had some things changed her life, so she will be there, be our guest next week. So Omina will be our guest on the second Thursday instead of the third this month. And then Penny from Canada just sent me something that Dr. Greer is going to be in L.A. Doing the like the three-hour lecture. We've listened to something here on the call already, but he's going to actually be in February 21st in L.A. You can go and see him there, and you can also do it online. You have to buy your tickets by February 8th in order to listen to this on the February 21st, and I think it's $30, and it'll be a three-hour lecture. So she wanted to pass that information along to you. Team, is there anything else that I've forgotten that we talked about that I need to mention here? You can also send me a message, stargatemarita at gmail.com, if you have suggestions or thoughts that you would like to share with us on that. Anybody on the team? Speak up. Okay. Yes?
I was just going to say if I could still have a little time with Sister Rainbird, because I just wanted to ask about how the Mayan influence, the Mayan calendar influence for Barack Obama's State of the Union address on the 12th. I think it's 13 Kimi on the 14th. I'm just looking.
She did talk about that.
I know, it just went so fast.
Okay. All right.
Are you there, Rainbird?
Yeah. It's 11 con. Okay. So 11 is spectral dissonance. It's change. It's letting go of what no longer serves us. So through destruction, there is creation. Blockages and resistance must be released. In this time, there is freedom from restriction. Chaos and dissonance must be released so that there is a clearing of old patterns and an emerging wholeness. Growth during this time occurs through reexamination. The vision quest is represented by tone 11. Now is the time to choose free will and liberty over death and decay. And it's a con, and so that's about sowing seeds and timing. And
I know all about that.
Yeah, you know all about con. You're a con. So I think it's just knowing his style. I just think it's a good energy for the day. It's his last speech, so he is letting go in those ways, but he's also setting a tone for new. He's like, I think he will. I think you'll see tone 11 showing up.
Yeah, you know, 11 in general is mastery, too, so I expect a master talking, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Rainbird. I just wanted to say something, again, a little more about, you know, thinking about Barack doing his speech then. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. And I know, Tara, you wanted to say something about asking for some assistance here, and so maybe you can do that. I don't know. Kathy, did you have anything you wanted to say before we...
No, Marita, thank you so much. I'm just okay. Hanging with the rest of us.
All right. Okay, Tara, go ahead and with whatever it was. Before I do that, let's say our guest the next hour is Reverend John Polk. This is someone that I have not met. However, the radio station sent out a list of some people that we might want to have or consider for our guest night. And so this is one of those that we're going to be experiencing. And you and I are going to really, I've talked to him on the phone and had some emails, but this is our first experience with it. So we'll have that the next hour. And we want to hear from Rama, who he's talked to today, and if there's any interesting things that Rama's got to say there. So we'll let you guys have a few moments here to do that.
There's a cat right there. Okay. There's three of us here. Tabitha the cat says, I've got something to say here. The most important thing is that there's a rather large need for getting the car fixed, and we're living with bald tires, and we can't get new tires until we fix the basic mechanism of the car. Like, we need shocks. And what do you call those?
Ball joints.
Ball joints and a oil sender and
oil sending unit and the upper and lower control arms. These are the things that.
And then the labor's real expensive too. It's $510 because it's almost an all-day affair to do all that. So it's about it's exactly $1,377. And Rama has to keep on filling up the tire at the back end on the right
every day
because he doesn't have a spare either. So we're kind of in, and it snows on and off here and ice and stuff. And so this is a very precarious sort of situation. And I know we need some extra oompa-pa for that. So, and if people who think they can add some assistance and we can pull it together, then as you could send an email, so that would rest us a little more easy and we don't have any food either. And I guess people did their thing on the New Year's and the Christmas and, you know, for their families, but it's just, that's what's going on. And
as people could do a MoneyGram or Western Union, that would certainly help.
PayPal is really fast. PayPal's faster than all of those things.
No.
Yes.
MoneyGram's the same, or MoneyGram and Western Union are the same day. The other takes 3 days to get in your account.
It does.
Well, you have a special card now.
I'm waiting to get a different card. I am.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah, Western Union and MoneyGram is, because I'm down to 35 miles to empty at this point.
Yeah, and it's just the whole nature of getting the car fixed, that he's got to drive 20 miles away with the car in that condition just to talk to the people that he needs to talk to, and then 20 miles back. So that's kind of making yourself a guinea pig for things. So I just thank you, everybody.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and you didn't tell
them exactly where to send that, what the email is, et cetera. Rama, who want to do that?
Okay.
Coran999@comcast.net.
That's the Coran with three nines.
And that's Coran. 999
at comcast.net.
Yes.
And then the Ram D. Berkowitz, that's capital R-A-M, initial D as in David. And then Berkowitz, capital B as in boy, E-R-K-O-W-I-T-Z, or yes. Z. And 1704 hyphen B as in boy, Yannel, L-L-A-N as in Nelly O, Street. And that's number 249. And that is in Santa Fe, New Mexico, 87505. Santa Fe, New Mexico, 87505. So, and then if you need to call for any reason, call Marita at 317-773-0061. And Marita will send a message and get us any information that you can get us. So, and tomorrow we'll put up a little post on the website.
Yes.
So is that good, everybody?
Well, we want to know if you did talk to anybody, Rama, and what their message was.
I took a little trip up the mountain here today because of the intensity of the energies.
Well, let's just back up one, because on Monday, I think, you talked to Lady Di, Dodi Fayed, and Lady Nada, and Tom the Ringtail Cat, and the King of Swords all together.
Yes.
And they were very simple, but they were very strong. And they said that the energy has indeed shifted, and that there is a possibility on the State of the Union address that Barack could announce full disclosure. They didn't say it's guaranteed, but there's a that's the first or the earliest possibility of something to happen like that. So that's why I wanted to know a little more about the Mayan calendar, too. And then to Nada kind of reconfirmed today when she said that as you were seeing things from my vantage point, you would see this is all already done.
Yes.
It is already done. Now, that doesn't mean that thing. It's just the thing. It's just saying that as you saw, the market fell.
Market fell 372 points today.
But I'm talking about on Monday.
Yeah.
That fall in the new year is the worst fall in the market since 1932. That's how serious it is. And the thing that was curious about it is that on Tuesday, then China was only up there doing their trading for about 10 minutes, and they had to close down their trades for the whole rest of the day.
Yeah.
And that happened again today. So, you know, Tom Hartman wrote this book called The Crash of 2016. I wouldn't be surprised. It's just that the way that the faction Three White Knights are speaking, that's on the table. And it's...
Yes.
I would rather it just... Let's do it. Get started with the new. But those are concerns. And you have to know that China has been rigging their numbers on their markets for 20 years. And what they've been doing is they created a housing bubble where they're not selling any of them. They've got at least hundreds and hundreds of little towns and villages, then they built these whole things with houses and high rises, and there is no one living there. And there could be thousands of them. I don't know. They've done so much of it. But they've just built these infrastructures to keep a bubble of their, somehow to keep that going with that. And it's falling apart. And they have gone into massive deflation over quite a period of time now. So, again, preparing for a transition that would be in the highest good concerning all of us. Europe is in a very weak currency, and Japan has been in a super weak currency for about as long as China has been rigging their numbers.
And that was not a hydrogen bomb test. That's right.
No.
Yeah, that did not happen.
That was a whole tons and tons and tons of TNT.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, we also have to remember that North Korea is an asset of the United States CIA and always has been.
Yes.
That being said, Rama has gotten a chance to talk with this person that's been coming on all the different stations about this.
Yeah.
And his name is he's Senator George Mitchell.
Yeah, he used to be the majority leader of the Senate when Lawrence O'Donnell worked within the Senate as well. This is during Clinton's era.
Yeah. And anyway, Senator George Mitchell is also the former special envoy to the Middle East for peace.
Yes.
And then he's also been the former majority leader of the United States Senate. And Lawrence O'Donnell had him on his show. And they had him on Al Jazeera tonight, too. But the thing that's interesting is I think that Lawrence and Senator Mitchell served together.
Yes.
And so anyway, China is key to solving North Korea. That's the question, I guess. So Lawrence says, Senator Mitchell, is it all about China? And George says, not all about China. Obviously, yet it is a significant factor. And in fact, what may be different this time is that in the previous North Korean tests of three of them in the past, the reaction of China was immediate and negative reaction. This time, it hasn't. This time that was immediate reaction. The other times, no. I'm sorry, I got that backwards. So it hasn't happened before that quickly or that clearly. The question to Senator Sanders was, what can we do about China? And appeal to their self-interest. That's really the only way you are going to persuade them. The Chinese now have something to persuade them. The Chinese now have something at stake, a growing society, a growing economy, lifting up hundreds of millions of people out of poverty into the middle class, a massive infrastructure endeavor, growing rapidly by the day, and so having an unstable regime with an obviously insecure, erratic leader in possession of the possibility of being in possession of nuclear weapons in the middle of a completely failed society, a totalitarian country, is not a benefit to China. It is a burden. Now, Lawrence said, well, is it your sense that within the Chinese government that North Korea is, in effect, this kind of crazy cousin who they worry about every bit as much as the United States would worry about them? Mm-hmm. And George says, well, I'm not sure every bit as much as the United States does. Yet I think they have used North Korea, China, that's to matter, used North Korea to China's interest over a number of years. Yet in this instance, I think they clearly recognize that an all-out conflagration, which cannot be ruled out with as obviously the unstable leader as that society has and the insecurity of the entire regime, would be disastrous for China as well. And so I think there may be a possibility of appealing to their self-interest, not to our interest, not to the interest of South Korea, rather to the interest of the Chinese in somehow putting a lid on this. And Lady Nada said that China, you know, is basically affording Saint Germain an opportunity to intervene.
Yes.
And so let's take it to that layer. And I don't know what that looks like. Do you, Rama? Did she say?
Not really. Just that as we are looking like possibly and very probably a repeat of 2008, the way the markets are tumbling and, you know, gold and silver are going up at the moment. And there are all kinds of stories out there.
Yeah, we'll see that deflation going on, and then the price of the precious metals going up makes it even more of a hard crash.
Right.
That's, Sarah. Yeah, it's not good signs in terms of what's going to, you know, especially when people don't know that there's something else going to help out here. But to go on to the next part, Lawrence O'Donnell went on with him and went to another region and said, as troublesome a region as the Mideast is, where you worked so hard over the years, it always seems that as something goes wrong, last week just seems so much more stable than this week. And this is one of those weeks where we saw the execution by Saudi Arabia of a Shiite cleric, mm-hmm. and then the reaction in Iran burning the embassy. Now we've seen the collapse of diplomatic relations in the entire region among all of these governments, a bunch of governments, others associated with Saudi Arabia. What's your reading on the situation there? And George goes on and says, well, the principle you just described, last week seems calm, is going to be a multiplier effect over the next decades. We'll be talking about this for a long time to come in this show, Lawrence. Now, Rama, I asked Rama, what did Nada say about that? And again, at this level, you know, even in this country, look what we've got going on here.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to just say Iran and Saudi Arabia don't have anything on us. Yet this intervention at this higher level of galactic presence. And, that's another thing. Sometimes people wonder, so we asked, Rama asked Mr. X yesterday about Dr. Stephen Greer, because there's a question, well, who is he, and is he working at the highest of levels? And Mr. X said, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the only reason that they weren't successful in removing him by giving him cancer in the first place is because he's been, before he studied to become a country doctor, he was a transcendental meditation teacher.
Yes.
For at least 10 or 15 years. And then he went from there to teaching remote viewing, and the contacts and the energy has assisted him to move along. So, and the nature of what needs to be cleaned out, lest we have walked in a person's shoes where they're rubbing shoulders with Rockefellers, and from Rockefellers to Netanyahu's. Yahoo! and that's another thing. There's the Frontline's been doing a documentary on Netanyahu, and this is getting really close. Oh, that's right. Jeremy Scahill, Rama.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Scahill. He came on the
Leslie Marshall show.
And he came right out and said, what did he say, 9/11?
Bush and Cheney did 9/11 and our own government. And why aren't they in jail?
At least. And he was very, very demonstrative. And that's not, again, that's not a very easy thing to talk about.
Yeah.
When you have a gag order. And so these folks are, you know, the protection is there as you're walking this walk. Oh, that means a lot to be able to be a journalist that's going to be able to stay here. It just brought me up in China. There's the five journalists now have disappeared, activist journalists, and they've never been seen again, and that's not good. That's not good at all. But and then in Syria, the Syrian government military are actually they're actually starving the population to death. And there's some amateur film footage now on France 24 and DW News out of Berlin and NHK out of Japan, and there was this couple, and they escaped from Turkey. That's another place where they're Kurds, and Mr. Erdogan has been killing Kurds, and he's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah,
and so they had to escape for their lives, and they're living, and it's ice cold, and it's snowing up to the knees, and their little baby died because of the cold and no food, and now they've got a 2.5-year-old that's not doing well, and then they have two other children that are a little bit older, and they are just in tears, and they're asking for the international community to help them. So we have some really, you know, they look like they're in Dachau,
yeah.
These little tiny babies. And so, yes. And then I just wanted to say that Carl Boudreau, he did a short one just for this period of this, especially this last, since New Year's to now, you know, this full week we got, you know, we went to the finish the epiphany now, starting out. We're back out in all of it. He said it looks absolutely astoundingly critical everywhere, yet the movement and the flow of the activist hearts and minds of the spiritual togetherness of the people is actually strengthening. So, yeah, Rama.
And Michael Moore put out another letter calling for Governor Schneider to go to jail for poisoning the people of Flint, Michigan.
Oh, it is a scathing thing,
yeah,
that's going on.
I forgot that.
Rachel has been covering it very, very strongly.
Yeah.
And there is an activist journalist that was being interviewed by Rachel, and he's risking his life. I mean, he just made it very clear that people around him were lying, out and out lying about what they knew beforehand. Even before they implemented this change, they knew what
Governor
they were doing.
Governor Schneider is in bed with the Koch brothers. That's the best way to put it.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And the majority of these young children are from black families.
Yes.
Michael Moore lives in Flint. And so I'm glad he's aware. Nonetheless, this is going directly to Loretta Lynch, Attorney General Loretta Lynch, and makes it very clear in the petition that he belongs in jail, in prison for a very long time, and that there are people's
dying.
Children that have died from this already. So this is murder. And again, this is another thing that Nada and the other faction, Three White Knights, are saying, that there is just a movement to, you know, move this energy out of the positions, and to do it, each and every one of us, and this gun law, this executive order that Barack Obama has implemented has infuriated to no end the Republicans and Mr. Pepe LaPierre and the NRA. NRA, that's the other thing that Jeremy said, is a criminal organization.
Domestic terrorist organization
of the highest order. Yeah, and so I understand that Barack is going to do some executive working around with the immigration thing.
Yeah.
I still remember this scene where Hillary had gone down to Mexico, and then she came back into Atlanta, Georgia, and for some reason Barack Obama was there, and they met at the airport. And she gave him a lovely little hug and a kiss, and she said, "It's all yours. Have a nice day." And so basically she just said that, you know, she just wrote the whole situation off. And again, this is so hard for people to know that the situation with, and Nada said this today, didn't she? She said that Barack Obama is fully merged with El Morya's energy now.
Yes.
Fully. And that the intrinsic controlling 13 family overlord power is what it is, and that's a very it's a very covered up situation which is targeting Barack Obama, as though the power lies in his hands to do it. He's being guided by the Ashtar Command. On a regular basis, he sits with Ashtar and Sananda and Saint Germain, and the girls know it. They work with this energy. They talk to Rama. And Lady Di and Dodi's kids are involved too. And both kids, are doing things together. So I'm just excited in a certain sense. This has been really hard work.
Yes.
For, you know, for the way that Barack's sitting till 9 o'clock tonight. He's on CNN. Who's he with?
Anderson Cooper.
And they're talking about the gun issues.
The gun issue. And Gabby Giffords and Mark Kelly were on there live and talking about the fact that we need full background checks. This is not Obama coming in, sending in goons to take people's guns. Those are the lies that are being told by the dark side.
Yeah. I wanted to finish the conversation. There's just a little bit left here that Senator George Mitchell was having with Lawrence O'Donnell. And he said there has been internal conflict within Islam itself from the very beginning, 1,400 years ago, a bitter struggle. Oh, okay. A bitter struggle, not religious in nature, yet for political control of the caliphate that Muhammad had created occurred and lasted 3 decades. And finally, the group that prevailed became the Sunni, and the group that lost became the Shia. Now, that's an interesting piece. Mm-hmm. And all and off and on over 1,400 years, that has continued. And we have a connection with a person who is the daughter of King Faisal, and he pointed out that it will continue because on into the future with much greater intensity. Consider just these figures. Of the 7.5, of the 7.5 billion people in this world today, 1 in 5 are Muslim, 1.5 billion people. As the world's population reaches 10 billion, about 60, under current United Nations projections, 1 in 3 will be Muslim, 3.5 billion, which, to put it in perspective, was the total population of the entire world as recently as 1970. And these internal conflicts are going to continue. There will be a period of sorting out as the political order that was established, or you might say imposed, on the Middle East in the aftermath of the First World War has now collapsed, and a new one is emerging. So again, as we have the intervention, the connection of the similarities of the three major religions and going into the spiritual is going to be accelerated. So he's not quite saying all that, but he says, so your principle is absolutely correct, and it will continue to play out over a longer period of time. And the real challenge for America's leadership will be to discern how and in what manner can we most influence the events or not, as it's appropriate. And we surely cannot expect to control them completely. Or that's not the proper approach, is what I'm saying. Lawrence said, we spent a lot of time in the last year talking about dealing with the Iranians, especially in terms of the negotiations with the nuclear deal. Talk to us about dealing with the Saudis. The administration specifically tried to avoid this particular execution. Secretary Kerry spoke this out. He's about don't do this. Is there a way? What is our problem in the way we interact with the Saudis? Why couldn't we have prevented that single execution? And George says, because Lawrence, remember, the truism that all foreign policy includes a substantial dose of domestic policy. It's very true in our own country, as this presidential campaign makes absolutely clear, and we should not be surprised that it is true in other countries, including Saudi Arabia. The executions were a message, not just to Iran, not even primarily to Iran, rather to internal factions. Remember, 15 to 20% of Saudis are Shia. They have been in a state of turmoil and potential revolt, and this was a message sent to them as well. We cannot exclude domestic politics. We do not exclude domestic politics from our foreign policy deliberations either. Neither can or will the Saudis. And we have to expect this to continue in the future as well. I'm almost done, everybody. So in certain ways, we could say that an indication of some of the weaknesses of the Saudi regime is that they believe they didn't really have a choice in order to look forceful in order to look in control. They had to do this. George says, insecurity plagues those who usually are the strongest. You remember the old stories about the bully. The bully is the guy really who is most afraid of being hit. So the point we're making, he goes down here, and I just to shorten it, is that this is an old, old, deep story, and it's between Persia and Saudi Arabia. And so this is the deal, and King Faisal was murdered, basically, by the House of Fahad very recently, and that ended the Ottoman Empire in the 20s. And so that's a big, deep healing, spiritual healing. I'll leave that at that. So may the intervention that we represent, we are the ones we've been waiting for, be so. Namaste.
Okay. Well, thank you for the update there. And we have a guest with us tonight, Reverend John Polk. And he is an author. And his latest book is Yahweh is an Alien. So, Reverend John, come forward and tell us a little bit about yourself and this new book that you just put out.
Well, hello, Marita. How are you today?
I am good. And let me go ahead and give the 800 number so that if people wish to call in and listen and then ask questions, it's 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. So we can have discussion and back and forth conversations, questions, whatever you would like. So if you're interested to do that, we invite, after he gives us a little bit of an introduction here, for you to call in and converse with us. So go ahead.
Well, good evening, everybody. Once again, my name is Reverend John M. Polk. I'm an international metaphysical minister. I'm a Reiki master teacher. I'm the founder of Wolf Spirit Ministries, LLC, which is my ministry. I'm a co-host and co-producer of AquarianRadio.com. I'm a volunteer and consultant for Dr. Edgar Mitchell's Free Foundation, which is the foundation for research into extraterrestrial encounters. And I'm also a consultant and volunteer for Starborn Support. And in conjunction with Starborn Support and Dr. Edgar Mitchell's Free, they donated articles to my book. It's my first book. I have another book probably going to be published by the end of next month. But my first book is entitled Yahweh, the Biblical God, is an Alien. And it's definitely drumming up a lot of controversy, which is what I wanted it to do. And book sales are coming along really well. And I'm very proud of this publication. And I look forward to talking to people about it. Whether they agree with me or not, we can always talk about it. And, you know, air out our differences and find common ground as well. And
I guess the first question that people might have is, how did you come to this conclusion, or what made you want to get this information out?
Well, I am an ordained minister. It took me years and years and years to realize that the biblical texts were not talking about God. They were, in fact, talking about extraterrestrials. And God in the Bible killed people. He killed everybody. He killed innocent men, women, and children. Abraham bound Isaac, his son, for sacrifice to God on Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Exodus 11, God killed all the firstborn Egyptian sons, including babies. He flooded the earth and killed all of humanity. And I had a real struggle with that. I had a real problem thinking that this is our loving creator that loves all of us. And then, you know, you start studying Eric von Daniken and ancient aliens and the ancient astronaut theory. And I had to watch that show for a number of years before it finally started to click. Because, you know, per our conversation the other day, Marita, I grew up in church, just like a lot of us did. And it's hard to it's hard to get all the brainwashing out of your mind. Mm-hmm. You're raised thinking that it's the word of God, and it becomes doctrine. It becomes reality to you. And you know, since churches anymore, conveniently, and let me use the term conveniently over and over again, conveniently forget about the Old Testament, and they only preach the New Testament, which I think is a travesty in itself, because the whole book needs to be embraced. If you're going to be a Christian, you just can't pick out what appeals to you and what appeals to your selfish side. You need to embrace and understand and indoctrinate the whole book if you do in fact believe it's the word of God. And if you do believe it's the word of God, then your God kills people. And, you know, everybody's going to live and everybody's going to have a lifetime. Everybody's going to be born, everybody's going to die, which is the divine trinity within all of us. but we don't necessarily have to be killed by our creator because he does. We don't do exactly as he says. I'm just not going to believe that. And then I started receiving download after download after download, which I had to translate into a book. And the more that I received the information, the more I realized I had to tell this story to the whole world. And I'm doing it right now. And I feel like it's a part of my mission to spread the word. And my message is not original. It's not unique. I mean, it goes back to Zechariah Sitchin back in 1976 and Eric von Daniken back in 1968 with the Chariots of the Gods. It's not a new message, but I think it needs to be resurfaced and reexamined and something that we all need to talk about.
And what do you feel like? I know you discussed with me that you've had a lot of controversy and I mean, it's like causing people to think. What is it that shakes people up the most or gets them thinking and gets them wondering, oh, maybe I haven't always looked at the whole picture? What do you think it is that really speaks to people to get them out of complacency?
Once you start reciting the scriptures of the Old Testament, that's when people really start to pause. They either want to fight and argue with you about it, or they stop and acknowledge that there could be something to what I'm saying. And theologians, it's pretty easy to argue with them about this because the scriptures defeat their own arguments themselves. I was reciting scriptures to you the other day over the phone. Genesis 6, the sons of the gods descended to earth and mated with the daughters of men. Well, the sons of the gods were the fallen angels. Well, how can angels have sex with human beings? Angels, they're spirit beings. They don't possess a physical, tangible container or body. It's impossible for angels to have sex with humans. So now you got to go back to the literal interpretation. Genesis 6. The sons of the gods descended to earth and mated with the daughters of men and created an offspring called the Nephilim or the Nephilim, which were basically human alien hybrids. The fallen angels came to earth and found mortal women I'm not going to use the word easy, but easy to manipulate. And they found them attractive. Found out that they could have their way with them and had babies with them and created the Nephilim. And that was a big part of the reason why God flooded the earth to kill them all. Because they created this human alien hybrid species on the planet that Yahweh, who in fact is Enlil of the Anunnaki, he didn't approve of it. He didn't want humanity to have too much alien DNA within themselves because it would give them too much power and it would make them much more difficult to control. So the more you talk about the scripture, the easier it is to understand if you're open-minded to it and you're not just stuck in the New Testament.
And why do you think that, how did we get to the point where... when did the shift really get made from the Old Testament and leaving that behind?
It's a brilliant question, and I've thought about that a lot myself. And this is my best educated guess, is that Old Testament God, or Yahweh, which is in fact Enlil of the Anunnaki, I think he started to realize that all the hell and damnation and killing people was not a way to win the loyalty and the love of the human people. So he hand sculpted and hand created his own deity, Jesus Christ, to love everybody. And that's the new message. That was the new message. And he knew that Jesus Christ would also die a martyr. And also, if you pray to Jesus Christ, you in effect are praying to God. And by praying to Jesus Christ, you end up praying to God. And by praying to either one or both of them, these highly advanced creator alien gods are capable of receiving and harnessing our prayer energy. There's such a device which is called an electroscope, and they've used it in Mecca. They've used it at the Temple Mount in Jerusalem when there was large amounts of people praying to God or to Allah, respectively. And you could see spikes on the equipment. Second that people started praying, the equipment started spiking, which meant that there was a measurable amount of energy being released. And also, this was done on geodetic markers, on upwellings of earth energy. For example, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem is on a geodetic marker, and on this on a line going due north of Temple Mount in Jerusalem is Baalbek in Lebanon, which is shaped almost identical to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And then north of that, you have Mount Sinai, where God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. And then north of that, you have Mount Hermon, which is where the fallen angels descended to earth. They're all on a geodetic line on the earth grid. And these acupuncture points on the earth grid where these monuments were created, they harness earth energy. And then you combine that with prayer energy. You combine earth energy with prayer energy, and it exponentially manifests itself, goes up into the heavens, and then the creator god aliens receive your prayer energy and can harness it and can translate it into energy that they can use. Then let's say, just like most religious people around the world, they pray their whole lives to these, in effect, creator god aliens that they think are actually God. So when they die, their soul has to go through a version of that creator god alien's heaven before they actually become one with the real universal God consciousness and the God light. And this is a common practice done by advanced creator god aliens, not just on our planet, but on planets all around the Milky Way galaxy, Andromeda, our neighboring galaxy, all through the universe, and through the omniverse, since there is more than one universe. Now, extrapolate that. Let's say that Yahweh has a few hundred stars in the Milky Way galaxy where he has seeded life and he's receiving prayer energy and souls. Now, let's say in Andromeda, our neighboring galaxy, he has perhaps 1,000 stars that he's receiving prayer energy and souls from. And let's say on the far side of the known universe, he has perhaps 10,000 stars where he has seeded life and he is receiving prayer energy and souls. Now, just open your mind up to the possibility of how many souls and how much prayer energy is this creator god alien receiving, not just from our planet, but from planets all around the omniverse. And this is a common practice that's been going on for billions and billions and billions of years. And it's something that I wrote about at length in my book.
I had somebody ask a question. They said, would I give the phone number again for people to call in for discussion? It's 888-429-5471. And that's free for the United States and Canada. 888-429-5471. Thank you for your text to remind me to repeat it. And sorry for the interruption, but it seems like people weren't ready when I gave the number before. So, okay, where do you want to go from here as far as what kind of work do you feel that is the most important for you to do to help people understand? Maybe there's another point of view, or how do you get this information? I mean, you did your book, but are you how are you getting the knowledge of all of this out to the public?
How am I getting the knowledge out?
Mm-hmm.
By doing exactly what I'm doing now. I'm trying to get on as many radio shows as I possibly can, and I've been very successful in doing so. I've just aggressively been going through social media and, friending and following radio shows that deal with UFOs and the paranormal, and, you know, liking and retweeting a lot of what they're saying so that they recognize me through social media, and then direct message them after I think that, you know, okay, Reverend Polk hit me up again, Reverend Polk liked this, Reverend Polk retweeted that. You know, I don't want to do it immediately because they don't know who I am. You know, wait about a month or two and then just straight up ask them if I can be on their show, and or go on their websites and just do research on them.
Mm-hmm.
And just like I did with you.
Right. Okay. Does anybody here on our team want to ask a question? I think we've lost some of our team members tonight due to dental work and some other things.
That's okay.
Anybody on the team here? People, time to unmute.
Well, I just was going to say, have you studied anything other than, like, did you just take, like, the King James Version of the Bible and denote it that way, or did you look at some other numerical codes about how things are? And what about Divine Mother? What about that relationship, that things like, you know, Jesus was married? Do you have anything in that vein and terms of the law of love in the New Testament versus the Old Testament?
Brilliant question. I do believe that Jesus was married. I do believe that he married Mary Magdalene. I don't believe that she was a prostitute. I believe that they were very much in love with each other, and I do believe that they had children with each other. Completely. There are over 50 different versions of the King James Bible alone. And then the, I know, it's crazy. And then, let's see, going back to about 160 AD, that's around the time that the Bible, those Gospels, were actually rewritten. And how many times had they been translated from Greek to Latin to Roman, back to Latin, and then eventually to English?
I understand that Jesus spoke Aramaic. That was the original. Yeah.
And it was originally written in Aramaic also. Astute observation you bring up, and something that needs to be reexamined also. To answer your question... Yeah, I cannot profess to be an expert on every single one of the 50 versions of the King James Bible. I don't think anybody can. But there's basic premises that are pretty obvious throughout all of the books, no matter what. You know, there was Noah's flood. Something that you'll find interesting is that there are over 2,000 flood myths in different theologies around the world. I mean, all the way to China, to Australia, to South America, even the southwestern United States. Pretty much every continent on the planet has flood myths. Every religion has a creation myth. Every creator god alien that established culture around the world claim that they were the grand architect of the universe. Not all of them can be correct. And in effect, none of them are correct. They're simply aliens that are trying to take the credit for everything that the real universal God consciousness did himself. And we primitive humans, we didn't know any better. A lot of us back then, they created us and or they interbred with us. And or a lot of them today are, you know, we walk among aliens. We don't even know it. A lot of people are human alien hybrids and they don't even realize it. You know, we all have alien DNA that's in our blood. I mean, we all do. So we all actually come from the same creator. There is monotheism. There is monotheism. There is one God. There's not all these different gods. And what upsets me about all the different gods that are portrayed as God out there is that the whole system is set up for us to fight and go and be in war with each other at all times. And I think that if the world can come to terms with the fact that E.T. established religion across the world, that we would realize we all come from the same source. We all come from the same God. But we're taught to deify and worship these different gods that have just completely different basic theologies and basic tenets of religion and the way to go about life, which lends itself to battle and war and conflict. And it saddens me that we are in a constant state of that at all times.
So how can we use the information you're bringing out to create more unity and more balance?
Just to simply talk about it. And it is a hard pill to swallow. It really is. It took me probably 4 years of studying Eric von Daniken, studying the ancient alien astronaut theory, to understand that he was right. It took me years and years and years. But the more I read about it, the more I watched the TV shows, the more I was able to absorb and digest the information, it slowly made sense. But it took me years and years. As an ordained minister, I had to fight my own education, my own upbringing, my own family's influence on me, going to church, singing in the choir. It took years. And then that many years removed, I feel much more lucid and much more at peace with the fact that, you know, I don't have to think that the God in the Bible is the God that, you know, if you don't do exactly what he says, he goes and kills people. And I don't like the way that God in the Bible looks at and treats women more specifically. Really bothers me. You know, according to the Bible, according to the Old Testament and the Bible, and I don't agree with this, allow me, especially ladies, I love ladies, you know, Mother Earth is a female. The Bible really, really looks down on women so badly. It bothers me. If a woman does anything to her hair, if a woman colors her hair, if a woman straightens her hair, if a woman puts makeup on, if a woman wears clothes that exposes her skin in any way, if a woman is not subservient to her man, if a woman even talks out of turn in the presence of her husband, then she's supposed to burn in hell for all eternity. And I just cannot buy that. I can't buy it. You know, I don't like the way that women are shamed in not just the Bible, but a lot of different religious texts around the world look down on women like that. And that's not the God that I want to worship.
Well, and we have all the cultures where the women have to be completely covered that are still in existence today. So that's following those traditions.
It is. And, you know, Old Testament Bible, you're considered a prostitute or a whore. And I cannot fathom that. You know, mm-hmm. Also, it's considered violating your holy temple to do anything to change the way that God made you. Anything, which includes putting on makeup, which includes coloring your hair, doing anything with your hair. You know, and that's not the God I worship. My God loves everybody, and my God understands that women are going to change their hair color. Women are going to wear nice clothes. They're going to, you know, appropriately show some skin, and it's not inappropriate. And those old caveman kind of tenets in the Bible and other religious texts from around the world, it really troubles me. But based on that, how many women and just people in general are Christians, and yet they live a life that defies all the basic tenets of the Bible.
Reverend John?
Yes. please, go ahead.
I was just thinking, you know, I have taken comparative religion studies. And in the Tibetan Buddhist traditions, what's called a whore biblically about Magdalene, there is a temple goddess, and she's described as a Dakini, and she's a teacher of how to use the Kundalini to bring it up and to transform it into a higher form of love rather than the lower carnal instincts. And it has a completely different contextualization. And so I just wanted to plug in, then you can look at that and then go back to Egypt, 13 to 1500, the 18th dynasty in particular. And there was a dual pharaoh reign called Akhenaten and Nefertiti, and they co-reigned equal. And that was the time when when Mother Goddess walked physically on the earth. Her name was Sekhmet. And the transformation of equality and rulership, that peace, it was a very short-lived peace, yet I feel like we're approaching it again right now. We're talking about equality and not monarchy either. Rulership where there is, for instance, in some governments, there's already 50-50. There's 50 women, 50-50, whatever amounts there are in their congresses. But in the United States, it's far from that. But Germany's got a pretty close call there. And I believe it's Argentina has 50% women and 50% men in their governing. And Barack Obama is Lilly Ledbetter law, which says equal pay for equal work. And so my sense is that the teachings of the New Testament with Jesus marrying Magdalene, they became equal. And they ruled together. And that's a whole different concept from the whole lineage of organized religion versus a breakthrough to a more spiritual balance and equality. And we're dealing with that in our financial circumstances right now, too. We're really coming to a point where it looks like this whole entire economy is going to move over and we're going to start something brand new. It's called the debt jubilee. And of course, we would need to be ready for living as equals without this power over version that the Old Testament definitely does with the feminine, which doesn't make you feel so good. Just wanted to put that out there and have you maybe give some feedback.
I'm glad you said what you said. It pretty much substantiates what I'm saying, is that I don't like how these old scriptures, basically it's a man's world and women have to do whatever the man says and that's it and that's that. Any successful, not just government, but even company needs some kind of duality. It doesn't need just men. And it doesn't need just women either. It needs a balance of both. You know, we need both. We need the father and we need the mother, just like any nuclear family does. We need it in all contexts, across the board, and no matter what context we're talking about. So, I'm glad that you brought that up. It was very important. It was said when Isis and Osiris walked through the lands of Egypt, that they loved each other so much that flowers would just bloom out of the desert sand. I mean, how magical is that? I'd like to see a return to that. I think that would be good for the whole planet and all cultures and all religions to accept all of us equally. Because the reincarnation, and a lot of men don't get it. A lot of men that do believe in reincarnation, they'll be like, well, I was never a woman. Well, yeah, you were.
Yep.
Yes, you were. And guess what? You were a homosexual at one time, too.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I was going to say we can take this beyond the gender thing. Take it beyond the gender thing and define femininity as the ability to receive love. And the masculinity is the ability to act with that love, having been received, to actually be able to share it. And I don't like to say give because, well, I like to say the ability to act in the world with that ability to receive love. In a sense, you know, there's a couple of books that's been written. There's one I remember is called The First Sex. In other words, behind every good man, there's always a woman, or you wouldn't be here.
Yeah, and your mom, you know.
That's yeah, right,
Tara. Yeah. When just before you started, Deborah called in and is waiting on line two. So since she's been waiting for a while, could we take her question, please?
Sure.
Okay, Deborah, step forward. Sorry, you had to wait a while here.
Whoops.
Okay. Yeah, she's been on here a while and wondered if... Deborah, would you please call back in again? Sorry we didn't get to you sooner. She got come in just before you started, and I didn't stop you. So anyway,
okay.
If you wish to call in, 888-429-5471, and we'll take your questions. Let's see if she can call back in again. Okay, so I guess you can go ahead if you... Well, I don't know if you were finished with that conversation there.
Well, I could go a lot of places with this conversation, this stuff. I was just going to say that, you know, by the time we got to Egypt, we had fallen, you know, there was a period before that 18th dynasty, and there's an adjustment to the history there. They say that we were living as cave people because of that ice age, and it butted right up to the 18th dynasty. So there was a lot of barbarianism going on. And then before that, we had the age of Atlantis. And in Atlantis, oh my God, I mean, we were far ahead of what we are now. We're just about ready to break through to that fifth dimensional consciousness now that we were living for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And then we got into some little detours where this whole constant cycle, I had this feeling though that as atrocious as it is right now, this war, you know, every time Amy Goodman gives a talk, she says, "Democracy Now, the War and Peace Report." And there's so many songs, you know, I'm from the Flower Child generation, and, you know, the Universal Soldier, he really is to blame. You know, he comes from you, he comes from me, and brothers, can't you see this is not the way to put an end to war? I think the atrocity of what we're in right now, I mean, the cusp of wanting to do a thermonuclear war, and the possibility and highly probability. I mean, we even got told from our friends that we talked to with the Faction 3 White Knights that Barack Obama may not wait too much longer. He could even touch on it at his State of the Union, which is coming up next Tuesday, where he might mention that we have some visitors here, that we really have a full disclosure to make here. And Dr. Stephen Greer is getting ready to do on February in L.A., a 3 or 4 hour discussion about our ET brothers and sisters. I mean, all of this is mentioned, sir. I mean, didn't you say that our God was an alien or something in the title of your book? Can you talk to this?
Yes, I can. I can. There is monotheism. There is one God. And all cultures and all religions were created by extraterrestrials thousands of years ago during the colonization of our planet. And they descended from the sky with great smoke and great fire and the trembling of earth. And they exited their vehicle or their fiery chariot, which is a term actually used in the Bible, and told the indigenous that we are God and you must worship us. And we, and by doing so, for the most part, as long as we did what they told us to do, they were benevolent to us. You know, they would give us technology. They would teach us irrigation. They would teach us how to build with stone. They would give us, you know, all kinds of advancements that we would not have been able to figure out ourselves for many millennia. And, you know, I do have to give them credit for doing that. But they did it so that they could control us. And going back to the prayer energy and souls, that's a huge part of what they do and why they do it. When your currency is consciousness, you want prayer energy and you want souls. A paper monetary system or a coin or rocks of gold and things like that, outside of a technological application, it meant nothing to them monetarily. I think it's just incredibly important for us to understand that we were colonized by aliens, and every one of these creator god aliens said that they were God, and to deify them and to worship them. And if we did, then they would be benevolent to us. But then we have to think that who created them? Who created them? Well, universal God consciousness did. Now let's go even deeper into the quantum hologram theory, which I write about in my book. One of the co-authors of my book, I shouldn't say co-author, he's actually the executive director for Dr. Edgar Mitchell's Free, and his name is Dr. Rudy Schild, emeritus professor of astrophysics from the Harvard Smithsonian. And he donated an article to my book entitled The Quantum Hologram Theory. And the quantum hologram theory means a lot of things, but the interpretation that I extract from it is that it implies a multidimensional existence. We're living in the matrix. So not only does my omnipotent God self or soul possess a physical body on the 3D earth plane, since my soul is omnipotent, that means that it exists everywhere at the same time, just like God does. And if it exists everywhere at the same time, just like God does, then it exists on all dimensions. And if it exists on all dimensions, then it's within the realm of possibility that in one of the other dimensions, if not multiple other dimensions, that it possesses another physical body. So we actually have concentric lives within our own self.
We do have a caller, so let's
please go ahead.
Take that, and then we'll come back after Carlton. You have a question for us.
Hey, peace and blessings, everybody. Just want to see if there's a way to kind of put things in a little bit of chronological context. If we go through the whole Lemurian, Atlantis, you know, Nubia, Kush, Egypt, Indus Valley, sort of a pattern. I'm trying to figure out where the whole. You're using a term, you know, Yahweh is a God. Let's just talk in terms of the Anunnaki. You know, we've heard plenty of references to them. Let's kind of put that in context, because for many millennia, we understood our inner divinity. We lived with that understanding. So where did the Anunnaki come in and have a situation where we no longer understand it, and now we're following them, and we allow them to interact with our community and don't understand what's going on? I'm trying, you know, because we can't be, you know, we can't be in a situation where we understand our creative spirit, but then at some point we look at somebody else as the creator and we the follower of them. When we already understood it, we already had a good sense of reality. So if I'm making sense, I'm trying to make some sense of this. We, you know, we didn't just wake up one day and say, you know, we're mortal. We're only 3D. These other people are bigger and greater than us. We don't understand who our creative source is anymore. Can you, sir, and maybe Mother Tara, can y'all kind of put that in context a little bit?
I can, actually. Is anybody familiar with Michael Cremo's book, Forbidden Archaeology?
Absolutely. I'm familiar with all his work, yes.
Okay, he's brilliant. I mean, I've learned so much from Michael Cremo. And one of his basic tenets is that we have to come up with new explanations for human origins. And I actually have a lecture of his on VHS tape, just to give you an idea how old that is. I watched it recently, and I'm thinking this was probably back in the 80s when my mom actually held on to it and then gave me the VCR tape. I watched it, I don't know, a few months ago. And he actually pulls out of his pocket an artifact that was carbon dated back to 2.8 billion years ago, and it was found in North America close to the Great Lakes. So if that gives you some perspective on how far back the human creation story goes, and on this artifact, there's little inscriptions carved into it. So you can tell that it was made intelligently. It was not just some kind of natural creation of the earth. And he keeps this with him, and he shows it at his lectures. And it's incredibly astounding. Now, according to the Sumerian king list, the Anunnaki have been here for over 450,000 years, colonizing the planet. Going back to their original need for gold, minerals, and ores to fix the atmosphere of their planet, Nibiru. And a big part of that was that they didn't want to do the mining of the gold and the ores, the precious minerals themselves. So they created what they called the Adamu, or basically human beings or Homo sapiens. And it took many, many trials. They interbred and mixed and matched DNA with the indigenous on Earth, which is something that even predated Cro-Magnon man. And after many trials and many failures, they finally came up with Homo sapiens. And they were intelligent enough to take orders, but they weren't intelligent enough to overthrow the Anunnaki. And then this whole epic goes back about 450,000 years. And then it's debatable after that what has happened. If anybody could come up with an exact chronology, you know, more power to them. I don't know that anybody can come up with an exact chronology. But the Sumerian...
Well, that's helpful, though, just what you said right there. That gives me a feel. I'll go ahead and hang up and, you know, feel free to explore it some more. But I got a sense of it now. I appreciate that.
Hold on just a second, Carlton. I just was going to ask a question that you might... Oh, he's gone. Oh, God. He tells people listening, but Reverend John, I know that there's a further back Anunnaki in entrance at to 65 million years ago that precedes that 450,000 year ago entry. So that's more familiar, the 450,000, but they entered that many millions of years ago. And then there's a reference in the Secret of the Andes to the Elder Race, and they entered 1 billion years ago. So, well, at least that was a concept that was discussed there, but 2.8 billion years ago is about Well, it's about, what, two-thirds of 4.1 billion years ago, and that was the Mayans entered in. They talk about their ancestors entering in at 4-point-something billion years ago. And when you go beyond this, even the fifth dimension, you go beyond up to through the 12th dimension, we're talking about 450 billion years ago, when consciousness at the level of 12th dimension actually entered into this realm that we are, well, it certainly wasn't like it is now, but there was the etheric physical was still around. And I just wondered if you had any concepts or discussions around those kinds of more ancient elder wisdom days of our planet.
Well, when I said 450,000 years ago, I was only going by the Sumerian Kings list. But I had heard those exact same, I had read about exactly about what you just said. And you got to figure that if it's not exactly true, that it's probably pretty close to being true. You know, it's impossible to chart an exact chronology going back billions and billions of years. But it just gives us the concept that we have to be open-minded to the fact it's hard to understand a billion years. You know, it's just hard to understand. As humans, you know, our life expectancy is into, what, the 80s? And now we're talking about, you know, billions and billions of years ago. It's hard to wrap your mind around something, a number that big. But, you know, 65 million years ago was supposedly when the dinosaurs were wiped out. And perhaps that was even done. And there is geological evidence that there was a meteor shower also that accompanied it. And that could have been brought on by the aliens, you know, between Mars and Jupiter. Is the meteor belt or the asteroid belt, and it's within the realm of possibility that either some of those or asteroids from somewhere else were directed towards Earth. And it is a good thing. We get so many different elements from meteors that are not indigenous to the Earth. For example, iridium, which is used on the space shuttles,
rhodium.
Yeah, and then it's very interesting that a lot of religious temples, pyramids, stone structures on geodetic markers around the world are right on the edge or close to craters from these meteors where there's high volumes of iridium and other trace elements that you can only find in and around these craters. And then, you know, every X amount of 10,000 years, whatever, the Earth does flood, whether it's done naturally or whether it's brought on by extraterrestrials. And I think that it's, you know, it kills everybody and it kills everything, but maybe it is necessary to cleanse the Earth. Because right now, the Earth's in a state of what you call koinonostasi, which is a Hopi term, which means we're in a state of imbalance right now.
Yeah, I went and saw that film when it was. I was going to say that in ancient mappings, and you can find this stuff on the internet, but they have talked about people didn't all die in the flood, and that Noah's Ark was not a boat; it was a amphibious starship, and that there was something going on at that time. Where another planet went supernova, and it was known as the planet called Maldak. And now suddenly you got the Zachariah Sitchin thing entering back. And that was a hydrogen explosion that the Maldakians were from Earth originally, and they were cast off of here by a few other ET races because they just couldn't get along and they kept on killing everything and its dogs. So they said, here, you could have your own planet and figure it out. And it was a very simplistic description, but they had nuclear hydrogen technology and they lived on opposite sides of the planet. And then there was what's happening now, which was, I mean, just tonight, on the news, they said that there was, in Oklahoma, around the Cushing area, there was a 4.7 and a 4.8 quake back-to-back.
Really?
Within back-to-back, and it's because they're fracking the ever-living out of that place. and you know, doing that hydraulic stuff, and then sending all that millions and millions of gallons that they destroy back into the earth, you know, under these shale layers. Anyway, what happened on Maldek is that a quake and actually disturbance of nature triggered one of the nuclear silos, and then since they were living on opposite sides of the planet, what occurred is that there was an idea that one side was attacking the other, so they sent their whole planet supernova, and that the fallout went and picked up all the water off the surface of Mars and kept going and dropped it in Noah's flood. And that we got radioactive water from a supernova, explosion that terminated the Maldekian planet and turned it into the asteroid belt, which it still is today. And so there are things that they have been putting together, that this idea of gods and ETs are all evolutionary or de-evolutionary stages of ourselves, going all the way back to 450 billion years ago. And this grand experiment and what we did with things and abilities, and I believe that this is another thing that the benevolence of our own sensibilities from remembering our Akashic records is that, wait a minute, I know there's 50,000 new technologies in the waiting room, yet you give advanced technology to a situation with all the disagreements because of this first contextual organized religion concept, which really needs a quantum leap to getting to the place of spiritual consciousness, which is really, as Dr. Greer said, he said, this is the ultimate frontier, that we remember that we're all one beingness, that we are not separate in any way, shape, or form, unless we try hard enough, you know. Let's drop another nuke. I thank you, but no thank you. And what did they say? The ones that engage in falling from that superconscious state, there are other parts of our beingness that exist, and the description like Ashtar and Sananda Kumara, and as the higher ensoulment, that's another thing, that story about the baptism at the River Jordan. My understanding was that there was a soul merge where the overlighted ray of wisdom at that soul level merged with the one that was called Yeshu, and that it was the one that we call Sananda Kumara. And so there was a higher state of consciousness that imbued the work done up until that point. And that doesn't just mean in that lifetime. It means many, many, many lifetimes, where he was able to go then with a more enlightened consciousness and touch people and awaken them. And Thomas Jefferson did something. He made this called the Jefferson Bible. Did you ever look at that Bible?
No, I've heard of it. Oh, actually, I do remember reading about it, is that he took scriptures out of the Bible that he liked and cut everything else out and created his own version of the Bible.
Actually, what he did is he cut every single miracle out. He cut everything out that was called a miracle. And then that Bible is without the miracles. He taught this is the core of Jesus' life. And then there's people like Nassim Haramein, and there's others, even Dr. Greer, where you can actually, they're really, we are a miracle, but there are no miracles, in the sense that as you understand the teachings of consciousness, you might say God is a number, you can actually create these things without thinking that you've got some kind of a superpower. You actually just have a wisdom where you can actualize these things by knowing quantum physics and quantum this, that, and the other. It's just that there's always this chance when we want to take this leap of misqualified energies getting their hands on this, and then without the consciousness, misqualified energy can destroy a really good thing real fast, you might say. And so that's kind of like, I think, where we are we not? There's a real advancing going on where people are, you know, Mother Sekhmet says, Rama channels Mother Sekhmet, but she always says this, and it really makes me laugh every time. She says the human race is at their best when they're at their worst. And we might want to use some of that wisdom right now, because we're teetering on, are you going to go and really destroy? I mean, there were pictures all over the television, amateur pictures of starving babies in Syria right now, and Yemen, and places where, you know, we're at this point of where did our humanity go? And we could change this very quickly, because the energies that are pouring in right now and the ability to share in this one beingness are available at the same time as this other story, which I'm not sure I'm ready to go back to the caveman life. Are you?
No, definitely not.
So, Reverend John, where do we go from here, and how can we help people understand where we've been and the potential of where we can go?
I think that's a great segue. There was a lot of other material that I wanted to cover on your show tonight.
We have the next hour that we can run into if you want to stay a night or if you want to come back. Either way, but we can. I do have the next hour, and we'll take part of that, and then we'll just close whenever we want to. Or we can have you another time. So, and we do both.
Let's do both.
Okay.
If we can.
All right.
That would be great.
Yeah, John, you can stay as long as you want. I hope I didn't talk too much.
No. You know what? I learned from these shows. I've been doing so many radio shows lately. And if you ever get to the point where you think you cannot learn from somebody, then you got a problem with yourself. So I've learned a great deal just in this 1 hour of talking to everybody on your panel. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. And, I learned some things. I've taken notes on some things that have been shared tonight. So, and I'm going to take the liberty of putting some of these concepts in my next book.
Please do.
Okay, so where do we want to go from here? How do we move forward, and how can we give people some uplifting information? I mean, you know, until you stand back and realize how much we've been manipulated, and how, I mean, as a really, really simple example, I mean, as I grew up, or as my mom grew up, she couldn't go to movies. But the time I grew up, I could go to movies. They wouldn't let me go to dances, but my brother, 6 years younger, it was okay for him to go to dances. And, you know, I mean, getting on me for not sticking with the church beliefs and stuff, I said, you know, all of these rules have absolutely nothing to do with spirituality. It's just man-made rules to control people. And once you stand back and you start looking at things from that point of view, it changes the perspective, and people don't realize that all of this is for manipulation and control. It's not about spirituality.
I would agree. Something happened to me and a group of over 20 people at a UFO conference in which I was the opening speaker, August 28th and 29th of last year. On August 28th of last year, I was the opening speaker at Experiencers Speak 4, which is done in conjunction with Audrey Hewins, who is the founder of Starborn Support. And Starborn Support Its function is to receive calls from experiencers and not be a counselor, but to just listen. You know, everybody that works with Starborn Support, including myself, we're experiencers. And an experiencer wants nothing more than to talk to another experiencer. Number one, it's so that they don't feel like they're crazy, and that and that what is happening, it is real, and that they're not alone. You know, to be honest, I still haven't fully come out of the closet yet. I'm afraid of using my real name on Facebook because I know I will lose my ability to make money. I own an entertainment company in Orlando, Florida. I work in and around the attractions in Orlando. And the day I go on Facebook as John Polk, they will not let me use Reverend John Polk. It upsets me. I'm an ordained minister. I can't use Reverend John Polk, but they won't let me. So I have this old Facebook account that I don't use, but I know that my big managers that work out at the world's largest attractions in Central Florida, they all go to church, every one of them. And if they find out that I think that God is an alien, I will lose all my contracts. That's something that I'm, but I'm getting to the point where my book is starting to sell to the point where I'm probably within 6 months of going, you know what? I don't care. You know, go ahead, get, you know, if I don't have the entertainment contracts at this big theme park or here or there, whatever, I don't care anymore. But anyway, getting back to Experiencer Speak 4, I was the opening speaker at the conference, and Audrey Hewins, who started the conference 4 years ago, asked me to be the opening speaker because she said that I know that you'll make it spiritual, that you will create a spiritual milieu, an atmosphere that will have a contagious vibe and energy that everybody will catch. And I want you to be the opening speaker. And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. So what did I do? I did a seance. So there was 79 experiencers, for the most part, at the opening ceremonies. And it was the first time I'd ever spoken a conference before. So I was a little nervous. But I decided I'm going to just come right out and do some of my poetry, which is all about the supernatural and navigating the astral plane and living on the other side. And then I said something to the effect that I can see ET. I can see angels, but I'm not special. I'm not unique. I know that a number of us here can do the same. And I ask, okay, raise your hand if you can see spirits, if you can see ET, if you can see extra dimensionals, if you can see elementals, if you can see something that is not indigenous to the 3D earth plane in a physical form, raise your hand. And very few people rose their hand, which kind of surprised me. And I said, but you know what? I'm not special and I'm not unique. And I can teach people how to do this. I can teach you how to see angels. I can teach you how to see extraterrestrials. So my goal before I'm done with my presentation, and or before the whole conference is over, which will be tomorrow night being the 29th on the full moon, culminating with Travis Walton as the final speaker, somebody who's never experienced anything will experience something for the first time. And somebody that lives on the other side like I do will experience something unlike they never experienced before. So the full day elapses the first day. The second day, and the conferences, I'm sure you all been to them, they're very long, long days, you know, 12 to 16 hour days. And then the last speaker on the last day on the full moon on August 29th of last year was Travis Walton. And right as he began to speak, four people walk in and they walk up to me. Out of everybody there, they walk up to me and say, hey, are you the person we give the money to be able to speak with Travis? I said, no, let me go find Audrey. So we found Audrey. They gave Audrey the money. And what's funny is that they didn't know and understand what money that they had in their hand. And they didn't even have enough money. But Audrey, she loves everybody. And they made an effort to pay some money. So she let them come on inside. And at the conclusion of Travis Walton's presentation, these four individuals came back up to me and started talking to me. And I'll describe them briefly. one I will call the grandfather. He looked probably 65 years old. Then I'll say his son looked about 35 or 40. Now, both of these individuals, and there was 20 plus witnesses to this, these individuals had bluish gray skin. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And then the other two looked pretty normal. There was a guy who was maybe 5 foot tall, bald, really small sunglasses on, cut off sleeves, jeans. He looked like a biker dude with a Fu Manchu beard. And then the other one was probably 18 years old in appearance, tall, good looking kid with dark hair and dark eyes. But after the conference was over, they walked up to me and the grandfather said, you know, that's my son, pointing out the youngest one. He said his father or his stepfather was drugging him. But now he's in my custody and I'm nursing him back to health and I love my son and this and that. And shortly thereafter, a group of people started to surround us. And one of the people in the group said to the grandfather, who we'll call Don, that was the name he gave, he had blue skin. This individual, his name was Keith Andrews. He said, "You have blue skin." And then all of a sudden, half of us, I would say half to two-thirds of us witnesses that saw these individuals with the blue-gray skin, we blacked out. They put us under what I use the term as alien anesthesia. I was going to take pictures of these individuals, and I was going to ask them some certain questions, and I was going to follow them out of the conference to see if they hopped into a spaceship or something. And I completely and totally froze and forgot. The guy doing videography, his name was Ron Sharfy, another one of the witnesses. He was doing the videography, and he forgot to get video of these people. It was unbelievable what happened, and there are upwards of 20-plus witnesses that saw these individuals. And when Keith said that your skin is blue, he said, "I'm a shifter, and I'm a healer." And then Keith asked him, "Are you from the Pleiades?" And he said, "Yes, I am." And then he mentioned that he had run into a Martokian, which is somebody from Mars. And I can only put together bits and pieces of what happened because I was placed under the alien anesthesia, just like most of us were. And if you ask each one of the 20 witnesses what happened, we all have very similar stories, but we all have gaps in time where we can't remember everything. And this, to me, was incredibly positive. Because I have never heard of a situation where human-like extraterrestrials walked into a public setting and were fielding questions from just regular human beings. But in effect, you know, are we regular? Yeah, we're just like everybody else, but everybody at that conference was an experiencer, even the people that were guests in attendance. And this absolutely blew my mind, and I've been talking about this on every single radio show that I have been on, and so has Keith, and so have others. And this story, it's starting to go viral, and I'm writing my next book is largely about what I'm talking to you about now. I could have told you the whole story. It would take too much time to tell you everything that I do remember. But this individual, Don, he was really the only one that talked. The other one that had the blue skin, once he realized that Don was getting very loose and very comfortable and very relaxed, I could see him. We could all see him go to Don, "Hey, we need to go. Don, we need to go. We need to go now." And they left. And every one of us, we're going to try and follow them out of the conference room, and every single one of us forgot to do it. Every single one of us were frozen in our tracks, like they did the Jedi mind trick on us, just like in the movies. It was one of the most unbelievable things that has ever happened to me outside of being on a spaceship, which has happened to me numerous times. But besides that, nothing has amazed me more in my life. And what extra gets me is that I'm the one who did the seance and did it in front of 79 people. And I'm going to be speaking at a conference in a few months, and then definitely another one in October, and possibly another one in September. I'm going to do the seance every time I speak at these conferences. And is it going to work every single time? Probably not. But but it absolutely did that time. And then I knew another individual that works with Dr. Edgar Mitchell's Free Foundation, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. His name is Ray Hernandez. Right at the same time, he went to Mount Shasta and camped out with a number of people. And him and every single person that went camping out there saw extraterrestrials on the mountain, to the point where it's just amazing that what's happening around the world. I'm starting to hear these stories that certain ETs in certain situations are making themselves visible and seen and known, and they're doing it on purpose. They want to be seen. They want to be acknowledged. They want to be understood as extraterrestrials, and it's slowly starting to happen, not just to me, not just to Ray Hernandez, but to people around the world. And I think this is a positive sign of greater things to come. And I definitely has to roll right into disclosure as well.
My husband had some experiences like that on Mount Shasta when he was kind of on a spiritual trip. And these women look like golden skin, and they were from the Pleiades. And were just beautiful, and you know, the skin was just. He says they really look golden, and so you know, there's been so much of all, so many of us that have had a lot of different experiences, and like you talk about, get the experiencers together, and maybe we'll want to announce where some of these gatherings are as you go along. You can send them to me, and but when you're back, you can always announce them. But if there's other things that are happening, we can announce it on here, and that maybe will be a way to get more of the experiencers together.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right now, in conjunction with Aquarian Radio, who is owned by Dr. Sasha Lesson and his wife, Janet Lesson, out of Hawaii, and it's the radio show I was telling you about, in which I'm a co-host and co-producer. They're putting together a conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico in October, and they want me to speak there. And then I'm going to more than likely speak at Experiencer Speak 5, which will be at the end of the summer of this year. And then a couple other possibilities of a couple other opportunities where I can possibly speak as well. And I'm going to let everybody know about all these different opportunities. And maybe we can meet each other at one of these conferences one day.
Well, some of the people you've been talking to tonight might be able to catch up with you in Albuquerque.
Oh, that'd be great. And it's possible that Janet and I and some others, my publicist, her name's Karen Patrick, are going to go to the UFO Congress. UFO Congress in the weekend of February 17th through the 21st of next month. Not exactly sure, but I might be there. I might have a table with Janet and be there.
And where is that conference?
Scottsdale, Arizona.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep people posted. We can always use this as a forum to get the word out. Anytime that there's things going on, we can make announcements. And, of course, have you come back and share some more ideas.
Oh, that'd be great. I love you ladies. You all conduct a great show. And
John, I was going to say, if you go there to Scottsdale the next week, I think the Crystal Show down there in Tucson, you might just want to trot right down to the Crystal Show. If you've never been before, that'll be an experience.
Are you going?
I'm not going to say no, but the chance of being able to, whatever. I have a friend. Our friend Pamela is going to go. So I mean, she's from here, but we'll probably be doing this show. That, let me put it that way. I don't think I get to travel there, but there's lots of light workers if you're going to Scottsdale, and you know, hop, skip, and jump up there in Sedona.
Oh, yeah. And my mom got married in Sedona in the month of May. It was awesome. I mean, oh my goodness, it was one of the best times I'd ever had in my life.
Yeah, Oak Creek is there too. That's beautiful. And yeah, all these red penises everywhere. there's nine power centers in Sedona, and Cathedral Rock is one. And
I went to it. We hiked it. My cousin and I hiked it with his girlfriend.
Yeah, and Bell Rock, and there's a Tibetan Buddhist place on top of this mountain too. There, Shantara's down there. There's lots of people. Our friends, our sister Caroline's down there from the show. I can just give you contacts if you want to meet some people, because there's all kinds of communities and light cities, and there's a lot of stuff going on in that part of the world.
And my uncle lives there. My uncle and his new bride, they have a home there, and they're into holistic medicine, and they've opened a practice there.
Oh, well, then maybe there's already the connection there, and they've met all these other people. You never know. Sedona's not that big, you know.
No, but it's the kind of place that I would actually live. I live in Orlando, and I like living in Orlando. When I'm bored, I will get my annual pass to Universal Studios, and I'll go ride the Harry Potter ride a couple times. You know, I'm a total geek about it, and I embrace my geekiness because it's fun. I love it. I live 15 minutes away. You know, so I go do that stuff all the time, and I enjoy it. And I don't want to grow up.
I heard that before.
You know what? We have not spent hardly any time telling people where to find the book and exactly the title of the book and how, if you want to give an email or if you want to be able to connect with people, that's your choice. But, we really need to do that. And, okay.
All right. So, you can friend me on Twitter at Reverend Polk, at Reverend Polk, at Reverend Polk. Communicate with me that way. My email is Polk, the number 2, at CFL, like Central Florida, .rr.com. Once again, jpolk2 at CFL.rr.com. And then my assets, which include a number of podcasts, talking points for shows, biography, pictures, etc., excerpts of the book, other things such as that, and the ability to purchase my book, which is entitled Yahweh, the Biblical God, is an Alien. You can go to johnpolkmedia.com, and that's JOHNPOLK media.com. You can purchase the book either ebook through gumroad.com, or you can purchase it through CreateSpace, which is a division of Amazon. You can purchase it either way, either ebook or paperback, however you would like to do it. And you can link to my other website, which is alienoraclescrolls.com. Alienoraclescrolls.com. Anyway, that's the way to get in touch with me, and that's the way to get a copy of my book, Yahweh, the Biblical God, is an Alien. And a part of the proceeds for each book sale goes to Starborn Support, which is founded by Audrey Hewins, who is a lifelong experiencer abductee herself. And she was recently on television talking about her abduction, her and her twin sister, been abducted since they were 5 years old, and their story is, it's pretty scary how, you know, they were basically used for breeding. But Audrey and I grew up in Ormond Beach, which is just north of Daytona, and Audrey has lived in Maine her whole life, came down on vacation with her at the time boyfriend, and she almost drowned on March 21st of 2004, which is on the spring equinox. And what is incredibly ironic is where she almost drowned and died, she was saved by an extraterrestrial who threw her a rope right when she was about to get hit by that last wave and suffocate and drowned. And she gets pulled out of the water, and she had rope burns on her wrists. And she's laying on the ground, and all the emergency workers are there, the paramedics are there, and they thought she was dead. And she actually did die and come back to life. And when she came back to life, she was asking where this beautiful man with this beautiful long hair and these big blue glowing eyes basically came up to her on something like a surfboard, threw her this rope, drug her into shore. Nobody saw this individual except for her boyfriend at the time. And then after that, she gets back to Maine and decides, I'm going to start Starborn Support. And she did. And I asked her to write an article and place it in my book, and she did. And what's extra ironic is I almost died in the exact same spot at the exact same time. And we didn't even know each other. It was pretty unbelievable. And when we start telling our stories, I'm like, God, I lived like right there, and I almost drowned and died in the same spot you almost drowned and died. So pretty incredible. You know how life will put certain people together. And the more you talk about it, and all of a sudden the world gets real small. You know, talk to enough people, you can find a chord of commonality with pretty much anybody. So anyway, well, thank you.
It's been an interesting show tonight, and we look forward to, we'll talk some more and schedule another time when it's a good time for you. And if anyone has questions, you can, he's given you some contact information, or you can all send them to me at StargateMarita@gmail.com, and I'll make sure they get passed on. So any final words from anybody else that we need to, before they're going to play our closing music, and we'll be seeing you next Thursday night on the Stargate Roundtable.
Are we ending? Is that what we're doing, Marita?
We are ending, yes. So, Doug, we can, or Don, whoever's at the controls there, let's hear the closing music, and we'll see you next week. Good night, all.